Today's gospel is one of the last in Matthew's gospel. Today's gospel parable is one of the last parables in Matthew's gospel, and it concerns a wedding feast. Weddings are a very consistent theme. Marriage is a very consistent theme throughout the scriptures. So in this parable, there's a group of virgins who are waiting for the bridegroom to arrive so that the wedding feast can begin. But there's a glaring question. Someone's missing. Where's the bride in this story of the wedding feast? So I think this is actually really important to our understanding of the story. And there's another gospel story, famous one, involving a wedding, the wedding feast at Cana in John's gospel, where Jesus turns the water into wine. And there you have a wedding feast, wedding guests, among whom are Mary and Jesus and the disciples. And you have waiters and a head waiter and a bridegroom. And there too, no bride. And that's not by accident. So what's the deeper meaning here? First of all, if we just think back to what happens in the parable, there are five virgins who are wise, five virgins who are foolish. The wise ones are wise because they're preparing for the arrival of the bridegroom. They've expected his to have to wait, so they bring enough oil for their lamps. The foolish ones are imprudent, and so they don't bring enough oil. The bridegroom comes, the foolish virgins are not prepared, and so they are not there when the bridegroom is letting the others into the wedding feast, and they themselves are locked out of the wedding feast. So the bridegroom is Jesus. A number of times throughout the Gospels, Jesus refers to himself or is referred to as the bridegroom. And we can understand this in different senses. In one of the ways that the early church saw Jesus as like a symbol of the bridegroom is that in Jesus himself, there's a marriage. That in Jesus, there's the marriage of humanity and divinity, but one person. And so this is the miracle that happens in the womb of the Blessed Virgin Mary, as humanity and divinity meet. We get this church teaching from the Council of Chalcedon in 425, which said that Jesus is one person and two natures, a divine nature and a human nature. And the council said that although these two natures of Jesus are forever connected and inseparable, they're also distinct and separate. And this is important because we say that Jesus is 100% God and 100% man. So he's totally God, totally man. If the humanity and divinity were mixed up with one another, this would create a third thing. And then Jesus would be not 100% God, not 100% man. So the two natures are united together, but they're distinct from one another. And the fathers of the church said that that's a marriage. The marriage of divinity and humanity happens in the person of Jesus. Similar, analogously, we could say to a married couple who are two distinct people, yet they're united in their marriage bond. And so you have a single reality in terms of their being united together, but they remain two separate people. So marriage. So just like similar to human marriage. But there's an important difference between the marriage of Jesus and humanity in his person and human marriage, and that is that, so this is Sometimes when I talk about this, people get upset at me, but I will try to explain it. The difference is that human marriage is temporary. And the marriage between the humanity and divinity in Jesus is permanent, eternal. Even at this moment, Jesus is in heaven, body and soul, humanity and divinity. His two natures are perfectly united, yet separate, distinct from one another. And so the marriage of humanity and divinity in Jesus is for all eternity. But human marriage is not for all eternity. There's one thing that can break the marriage bond, and that is death. And that will happen to each one of us. So this is helpful for us because when someone's spouse dies, this is what enables them to have a second marriage, because their first marriage bond is broken, and so they can have a sacramental marriage with the second person. You can't have a sacramental marriage with two people at the same time. This is Jesus' own teaching in the gospel. So we don't bring our marriage bond into heaven. This doesn't mean that we don't bring love into heaven. And actually, the good news is that in heaven, you'll finally love your spouse perfectly. That will happen. Perfect love between you and your spouse. You didn't think it was going to happen, but it will happen actually in heaven. Perfect love between you and your spouse. So that's what we have in heaven. Perfect love between men and women. But the marriage bond we don't carry into heaven, and there's a very important reason why, and this parable helps us to understand why. So we said that the bridegroom in the parable is Jesus, and then we have these other characters, the virgins. Now, there are some English translations that have that call them the bridesmaids. So you have the wise and the foolish bridesmaids. There are some translations that call them attendants or servers. Those are all bad translations. The word in Greek is parthenos, which means a young unmarried woman. So we have 10 unmarried women, virgins, in other words, who are all waiting for Jesus. And there's no bride, but there is one single bridegroom. And so what's symbolized then when the virgins who are waiting for Jesus, the bridegroom to arrive, what's symbolized there when they enter into the wedding feast? Well, that's what happens when we go to heaven. We enter the wedding feast with Jesus, and then what happens? We become married to God. And this happens because we're part of the church. And the church, as St. Paul tells us, is the bride of Christ. But the church isn't just a single person. The church is made up of many people. So that's why there's not just a single virgin waiting there for Jesus. There are many virgins waiting there for Jesus. And the only reason that they can be espoused to Jesus is because they don't have a wedding bond, a marriage bond with anybody else. Because you can't have a marriage bond with two people at the same time. That's Jesus' teaching. That would mean we would have an undivided heart. So that's the gift of sacramental marriage in this life, is the gift of an undivided heart towards your spouse. Of course, we live that imperfectly. And it's always in need of purification. But then what happens in death? The marriage bond breaks. Why? So that we can have an undivided heart entering into the joy of heaven, where we become part of the bride of Christ. The fathers of the church all said that our soul then is espoused to Christ in heaven. And the only reason that this can happen is because we're free to marry, we would say. Our wedding bond having been broken. Again, perfect love, finally with our spouse in heaven, but the marriage bond in heaven, there's one marriage bond in heaven, and that's between Christ and his church. So that's the deep meaning of this parable. I think it also helps us to understand the vocations of those who don't enter into earthly marriage in this life. Because what Jesus is showing us here is that your spouse, as good as they may be, hopefully are, your spouse is not your eternal destiny. God is your eternal destiny. So some people are breathing a sigh of relief right now that their spouse is not their eternal destiny. Our hearts actually were not created for our spouse. Our hearts were created for God and only to be fulfilled by God and in God. And that's what happens in heaven perfectly. Total fulfillment in God. So this helps us to understand, though, that in this life, Jesus calls some, not the majority, but some to forsake human marriage for the sake of heavenly marriage. So, for instance, as a priest, what my priestly ordination does is it configures me to Christ. I'm not worthy of it. I didn't choose it myself. God chose me, unworthy as I am. And so through my sacramental ordination, I become configured to Christ. And what does that mean? Well, I share in everything that Christ has. And who is Christ? The chaste bridegroom of the church. So Christ is married to the church. And so in being ordained a priest, I give up human marriage so that I can participate more fully in Christ's chaste marriage to the church. And be, in a sense, married to the church. It's important for us to think about, this is the priest's relationship to the church is, it's relational. Like, I love the church. And who is the church? But it's all of you. So I love you as my parishioners, as members of the church. And I feel loved by the church in return. So it's a relationship of love. When God calls someone to celibacy, he doesn't leave them high and dry and lonely. Some days I wish I felt lonely. I never feel lonely. So similarly then, in the church, there are women who are called to religious life, to be sisters. And what this means is that they forsake human marriage, again, for the sake of heavenly marriage. In the rite of consecration for a religious sister, she's called explicitly the bride of Christ. When she makes her vows, and they're called vows for a reason, she espouses Christ to herself. So she's not a single lady anymore. She's a married woman with a heavenly spouse. The Second Vatican Council, so first of all, the fact that since the Second Vatican Council, our convents have been emptied, it's a terrible poverty for our church. Here's why. Because the Second Vatican Council said, which the Second Vatican Council itself had nothing to do with the emptying of convents. It was the incorrect interpretation of the council. But the Second Vatican Council said about religious women that they, and men too, brothers, religious order priests and brothers who take on the poverty, chastity, obedience, the council says that they are an eschatological sign. What does that mean? An eschatological sign means that they, in their own person, symbolize heaven. And so the religious sister who already in this life has Jesus for her spouse is a sign for us of our own destiny, because we're the virgins who Christ is waiting to espouse, which happens for us in heaven. For the religious sister, she starts to live that in that reality even now, here and now in this life. So the question for us today, after meditating on the beautiful theology of the church that comes out so clearly in Jesus's parable today, the question for us today is, which of the virgins are we? Are we the prudent virgins who are preparing ourselves for the arrival of the bridegroom? Or are we the imprudent ones, the foolish ones who aren't preparing ourselves? Because in this parable, five of the virgins don't make it to the wedding feast because of their lack of preparation. Not because of anything that Jesus did, it's because they didn't respond as they ought to have to the invitation of the bridegroom to be ready when he comes. So will we respond to the invitation of the bridegroom to be ready when he comes, because he wants, desires so much to espouse us to himself? This is a sign of his great love for each one of us individually, as well as for the church. So today, we're so blessed to come to this Mass where the bridegroom himself awaits for us. At this Mass, we already anticipate the joy of the heavenly feast, the wedding feast in heaven. So let's ask Jesus to prepare us, to prepare our hearts for the rest of our life, to be preparing us and helping us to respond so that we are the wise virgins, not the foolish ones, in the wedding feast.